welcome to the 11th episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 18th of July 2011, and in this episode we're going to interview Canonical's George Castro and stand in a circle to talk about Google+. We will of course cover the latest news, events, we've got a competition result to announce and a new one to set, and we're going to go over some of your feedback. I'm Tony, and with me this week are Laura, Mark and Alan.
Hello!
Hiya!
Let's start with Laura. Laura, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You've just got in, just made the show.
Just made it in time.
What have you been up to that's kept you late then?
I was at university in Guildford and the trains weren't good.
Oh dear.
So I got stuck.
Have you been doing anything more interesting recently?
Well, I've got written down here, doing some initial data analysis. I was at a conference last week.
So no then.
So I was at a conference last week, so presenting on some uni work.
Okay, and that went all right, did it?
Yes.
Excellent. Alan?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad. My kids broke up from school, and so...
So your kids broke up? I thought they were married.
I was getting worried.
Unconventional family.
So in traditional dad style, I installed Ubuntu on a netbook for them. I got a couple of old EPC E900s, you know, the old original white things.
Right. Yeah.
And I put Natty on them, and I put the Unity 2D interface on them.
Okay.
Because I found the 3D one was a bit sluggish. So put the 2D one on there, and... I knew what IP addresses they had, so while I was at work, I SSH'd to home and pinged them and figured out that they were using them. And the top process was Chrome, so I know they're on the web.
CBeebies website.
Exactly, CBeebies. And when I got home, all the blue ink in my printer had gone.
How mysterious.
Sam has a habit of colouring pages in completely, like you're not, you know,
right.
just a solid block of colour, and then printing it, and then running into the den where the printer is, being impatient, it not having printed, runs back and presses print again, and then I've got lots of blue ink, but it's on paper now rather than in the printer.
I've worked with people like that as well.
Yeah, he's four. What's your friend's excuse?
Mark, how are you?
I'm all right. I've got a bit of a sore throat today, so you might notice that my voice is extra husky.
You sound sexier than normal, I have to say.
Why, thank you, Tony.
Why have you got a sore throat?
Because I don't know. You've put me on the spot there.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a doctor, so I can't self-diagnose, unfortunately.
I thought it might be because you've been to a gig or something.
Oh, no, I have been to a gig or something.
Oh, really? But, that was seamless.
It's funny you should mention that, but that's not the cause of my sore throat. I went to see a band called Hasty Dixie, who are a bluegrass band from Tennessee who do heavy metal songs.
Yes, we played them at the first Og Camp as some of the house music when people were coming in.
We did.
Yeah.
Oh, they're good, aren't they?
I like them, but other people didn't seem to very much.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. Very entertaining band.
They can have their own community event and play their own music.
They'll play ours.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't have said that we play that. It was all for charity.
Yes.
Let's just put that out there.
Yeah.
What about you, Tony? What have you been up to?
Went to the British Grand Prix, which was a couple of weekends ago, or last weekend.
Did you get wet?
A little bit on the Friday.
Soggy.
Well, actually, quite wet on the Friday, and then slightly less on the Saturday, and Sunday was really nice. I was going to stand here wearing my hat, just for the podcast that I got.
Very first time I met you, you had a Formula One hat on.
I had, a Williams hat.
And in a pub.
I got a Team Lotus hat.
Very nice.
Both failed to finish the Grand Prix. They were the only two cars who didn't actually complete the Grand Prix.
You jinx teams by buying their hats.
No, he bought the cap afterwards.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Memento of his successful spoiling.
I like to favour the underdog.
He had to watch it first to find out who.
Exactly. Who's going to be the worst performing team in this race?
I got the McLaren cap. Yeah. Figured they were doing quite well in that grounds as well.
Well, he went out as well.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Maybe we should both not go to Grand Prix anymore.
Yes.
But it's the first Grand Prix you've ever been to, and it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Oh, well, let's get on with the show.
Early this month, Google released its new social network, Google+, as a limited field trial. Highly touted features include the ability to share photos, images and messages among circles of friends without others seeing them, and Google's new takeout service to easily download all of your data. Is this the like Facebook but not Facebook social network many have been waiting for? Should the privacy conscious feel safe in Google's hands, or is this just another tool for Google to profile every aspect of your life?
Discuss.
When you say like Facebook but not Facebook, many have been waiting for. There's 500 million or more people on Facebook. How many of those do you think really want a different social network?
Meh.
Yeah.
Those who have already signed up for Google Plus.
Well, yeah.
I've signed up because people invited me and I was curious. I haven't posted anything.
You're plus curious. Like.
Yeah. I think there are plenty of people who don't use Facebook on principle because they don't like their policies, blah, 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 blah. I'm not sure Google is the right company then to attract those people on the grounds of respecting privacy and not picking
everything.
But
they
data.
Have a strapline of do no evil, so surely they must be fine.
Mm, but they're also all about the search. And you know that they are going to be using that to send more targeted Google ads at you.
And they'll be way better at it than Facebook.
They've got that much more data to profile you across.
So one of the problems I noticed, and a lot of people noticed, is the first bunch of people on Google Plus are geeks, which is common on any new platform or new service.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's invite only, especially if it's centered around like places like Southwest America, you know, in California, where a lot of the techies are, you know, things like GoWalla and location-based thing, Foursquare, kind of things. Yeah. They kind of start off in one geographic location and there's lots of geeks and then eventually spreads out. The same thing is kind of happening with Google+. It's mostly geeks.
And the contrast is that isn't what happened with Facebook.
No,
that started with normal people. Yeah.
Well, students.
Students, not geeks, though. Yeah. Just ordinary students.
And so when you use it, the people you're talking to are people who probably you already talked to on IRC or Twitter or Identica or Facebook.
Yeah. It was quite interesting. I didn't really realize that I had a Google Plus account until I clicked on something that took me through and then it told me, oh, congratulations, you've just joined the beta. I was like, oh, okay. And it said, do you know this person? I thought, yes, I do. Do you know this person? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And only some of them actually had Google Plus accounts. Yeah.
That was the weird thing.
Strange, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them were other people who presumably then got an email saying, so-and-so is following you on Google Plus, even though they don't have an account and I'd only just got an account.
Right.
But since then, I've had a few notifications saying so-and-so is now following you on Google+. I'm like, I have no idea who they are. They obviously know me, perhaps through the podcast or something, but I have not got any barrier to stopping them see. Well, there may be security controls in there, but by default, they're not set up to stop me sharing information with people that I don't know.
Whereas by default it doesn't share with people.
Yeah, they have
know.
To be okay. in a circle, I think.
Yeah, you have to have added them to your circle for them to see what you post.
Right. Well, the notifications say so and so has added me.
Yeah.
Their names I don't recognize.
Yes, I've got a lot.
Yeah,
of
I've got a lot.
Well.
Like
but does that
them.
Mean they can't actually see anything
until you add them to your circle?
I think. There's two ways they can see what you post. One is if you post stuff not to circles, but if you just post it.
So you can do that.
So the concept of circles is you have groups of people like Facebook groups, and you put like you might put people you work together in one, family in another, or people who work for a particular project or something in another.
Diaspora does something like that.
Yeah. It does, yeah. And you can have people in multiple circles so they can overlap. Mm. And they won't see anything until when you post, you get to choose which circles to send it to. And by default, it's your circles.
Mm-hmm.
And by default, therefore, it won't go to people who aren't in your circles, if that makes sense.
But you have that option.
Does that stop the classic scenario of somebody, the girl who posted on her Facebook saying, oh, my boss is a creep or whatever, and then forgotten she'd added her boss.
Yeah. So if her boss wasn't in the circles which she'd posted that to, if she just posted it to friends and family and not to work people,
the
work people would have no way of seeing that.
Well, yes and no, because someone who does follow her and is in her circle might repost that.
That's what I was wondering.
And actually, when you try and repost, when you reshare something someone else has shared, it does give you a little pop-up warning to say, you know, this was sent to a limited circle of people. You know, be respectful, don't repost this to the whole wide world kind of thing. But it doesn't actually technically stop you doing it.
It's like tweets on a private account, isn't it, on Twitter?
Well, no, because with Twitter, the default Twitter client won't let you retweet from someone who's got private tweets.
No, but you can just copy and paste it.
You can.
But then you could do that with anything.
Yeah, I could. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
it's only a minor kind of technological barrier.
Yeah, yeah, but it makes you think a bit, because on Facebook, you know, I just click share and mm-hmm. it reshares whatever with yeah. my own comment above. Whereas at least with Google, it gives you the little, you know, psychological, you yeah. really want to think about what you're sharing.
Because on Facebook, you also get where somebody's written a comment to a post that you can see. You can see their comment, even if you've never met them, and, you know, heard of yes. them in your life and things mm. like that. So there must be something very clever going on with Google Plus if they're trying to keep within those circles.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I don't know how they do that, but yeah. Mm.
So is Google Plus going to address a need mm. that doesn't exist?
I think it will address one of Google's needs.
The one about having all of your data.
Exactly. Well, the thing that's really struck me since Google Plus has started isn't Google Plus. What struck me is that the toolbar, which appears at the top of all Google sites and has done for ages, is now black, and I now notice it, and I now think, oh, that's got my documents, oh, that's got my calendar,
yeah.
oh, that's got my photo in the top right, and my name,
yeah,
and my emails, and all of this other stuff about me.
Just because it's black.
Yeah, just because because before it was white and all yeah. Google's pages are white.
Yes.
But now it's black and all of Google's pages are white, and it's got my photo in the corner and it's got my name in the corner. Whereas before it just had my Gmail address, which I don't really use for anything.
Yeah.
Kind of like a toolbar.
So now, yeah,
it's
a lot
a bit
like
of a
toolbar.
Reminder, isn't it?
It's almost like it's designed to be in some sort of browser-based OS, where that would be how you switch between your applications.
Oh, I see. Right. Yes. So if you were to run your browser full screen, it would be like a menu bar across the top
yeah.
of the screen.
Yeah,
almost. And it does feel like that because yeah. you've got the little tabs that are mail, calendar, document, sites,
and
so on.
Clicking on your photo is a bit like clicking on the Me menu in Ubuntu.
It shows all your notifications.
Yeah. And if you are to do that, they don't have the issues that, say, Ubuntu has with where to put everything, because a lot of that stuff, like installing things, just isn't there.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have that complication.
It's all in the cloud.
So what do you do? Do you set up one of the things I noticed is that Google Plus isn't available if you use Google Apps for domains. So I have my popey.com domain. My email is managed by Google. So
right,
all my mail for popey.com goes to there. Mm-hmm. And because you can't use Google Plus if you've got one of those accounts, I've had to use, well, I haven't had to, but in order to use Google Plus, I have chosen to use a Google account, which isn't part of that domain.
Right.
And it's an old Gmail address that I used to use, but I don't use anymore. So I never get any email to that. All I get is all my notifications from Google Plus.
Yeah.
And that's really funny, because I've just seen on Google Plus that when I was looking at suggestions for who to add, it said your old popey.com address isn't on Google Plus yet.
Yeah. And if you try and send one, it just won't work. It won't send one to me because it knows that it's a Google Apps for Domains account.
Uh-huh, you got banned.
Already.
Well, no. The problem with that, or the good thing about that, is actually it's kept everything separate. So Mark's concerned about having, you know, always having that black bar at the top of the screen and having your name there. Mm. You can actually get away from that because none of my documents are in that Gmail account.
Yeah.
But the problem then is you end up with separated accounts. Mm. So I have to have multiple tabs open if I want to have, you know, all of them. However, yes. What you can do with Gmail, with Google, is in the top right-hand corner, if you click your name, there's an option to switch account. Right. And when you do switch account, it lets you log on with the other account. And once you've done that once in your browser, it remembers all of those accounts. So I can have...
They're now linked.
Yeah, they are now linked. So in effect, they do know that Alan, you know, the Gmail account there is the Alan, you know, here. So in effect, they still have that data kind of tenuously linked, despite the fact they have to enter a password to get to it.
Yeah. One thing that just occurred to me is that they're going for this whole OS thing, and you've got mail, calendar, documents, photos, reader, and web pretty much. They're all the ones on by default at the moment. And none of those really require a kind of critical mass of people for them to be usable and used. Whereas, because I was just thinking, Facebook, why would I bother changing? Unless the entire group on Facebook shifted to Google Plus,
yeah.
Why would I bother? I don't care enough to move in by myself. Whereas for Google Plus to take off, they need people to make that move, really, because who's going to bother updating both Facebook and Google Plus unless it got merged together in some way?
Yeah.
But Google Plus won't take off unless they get more than just the initial geeks.
Mm. Well, the interesting thing about that is all of the other things they do are actually just services based on open standards. They're email, RSS,
and
things
you can
like
just
that.
Use them.
You can just use them, yeah. Mm. And, you know, even sharing photos through Picasa, you upload it and you share it through the web. It's no sort of proprietary photo sharing protocol.
Well, no, but it's all proprietary back end. They're hosting, you know,
cloud service provider.
Yeah, you have no control over it.
No, but what I mean is the reason that they don't require critical mass for you to use them, unlike Google Plus, which is going to require critical mass because it needs everybody to be invested in this wolf's garden, essentially. Yeah. Whereas something like Picasa, you just need people to be able to access your photos when you put them there.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I think integration is going to be the key for Google Plus. If Google Plus integrates really well with search and with the calendar and mail and all the other things they do,
yeah,
it will become the easier thing for people to use than Facebook, where you still have to upload your pictures or send them via email or some other message to get them onto Facebook, and you still have to log in, even using an app on your phone as well as on the web or whatever, to update your status or send a text or something. It's going to become easier to do it's going to be integrated, let's face it, into Android and stuff in the future, and it's going to be the thing that people will just fall into the habit of using, and it's quite pretty.
It's actually surprisingly similar to Diaspora.
It's very
clean. Similar interface with, you know, the stream down the middle and short links on the left-hand side and notifications on the right-hand side. It's very similar to Diaspora.
I mean, it's quite similar
to Facebook.
But without
the users.
Without the users of Diaspora.
Yeah, you've got like Facebook up here with 500 million and then Google with like whatever it is, 50 million or so users, and then down the bottom there's about 25 users on Diaspora.
So do we think this will actually work, bearing in mind that Google has canned Wave in the last year, or they haven't had an easy time of it in the last couple of years? They had to kill off their phone shop, didn't they?
Yeah, but Wave was something new and different, like wildly different.
Mm. And Wave might come back in future as a new...
Well, or even components of it. Maybe.
Bits of it still... I mean, collaborative editing in Google Docs came out of that, didn't it?
Aye.
Okay. I thought that came from Writely.
What's Writely?
Writely is the word processor that Google bought.
Oh, my mistake. I assumed that they basically acquired a load of technologies which would be useful to Wave, and then ended up canning Wave and just integrating those bits into...
I think you'll see bits of Wave, you know, in like the thing about Wave being able to edit a document and then press a button and it appears as a blog post somewhere. Mm. You know, they own Blogger, so that wouldn't be hard to integrate Google Plus with...
See what you mean, yes.
And in fact, pull that old Google Plus in and you've effectively got Wave again anyway.
Okay, well, I'm going to continue to use Google Plus for a bit and see what I think of it. I don't know if anybody... Are you going to carry on for a bit?
Yeah, it's, as Jono calls it, tab-worthy. I have it.
Okay.
I have it as a permanent pinned tab in Chrome. Oh, so right, okay. When I open Chrome, along with all my email, calendar, Facebook, Twitter, Google Docs, it's another tab that I leave open all the time.
Already?
Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly heavyweight. It just sits there and I look at it now and then.
Okay.
Much like Twitter and Facebook, you know.
I haven't found it worthy of a toolbar button yet, which is kind of my...
Your measure.
My measure of frequency of use.
I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence, really, because I've been, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I've been trying to move away from having all of my stuff in Google to having it all on my own server at home. And it seems a bit silly for me to now go, oh, that might be... But then again, I do use Facebook already, so I've already got my data somewhere.
So you're going to run your own Diaspora instance at home?
Well, when I heard about Diaspora, that was always my intention.
Yeah.
But then it was supposed to be released last September and be feature complete, and it wasn't. And then it was released in alpha and it was a bit quiet.
Lean, yeah.
Yes. And yeah, I haven't heard anything about it since then.
To be fair, I have to say, Diaspora is one of the other things I have on a tab.
Ah.
So I do actually have that under a tab, but I never looked
at it. I might give it another go, but I don't know. I'll have to evaluate Google Plus a bit further, I think.
That's how you keep up to date with what Fab's doing, is it? On Diaspora.
he's quite active on Google.
He's gone
as a Google Pluser.
Crazy nuts on Google Plus. Yeah, he's now
It's all I can see in my stream.
All right. Well, if you've got any thoughts about Google Plus, if you're planning to use it or planning to boycott it, or you've tried it and you like it or whatever, send us an email, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, or via any of the other methods that we'll talk about at the end of the show.
And now it's time for some news. Contrary to popular opinion, the CentOS project is not dead. They've finally released CentOS 6 to external mirror servers.
This is good news, isn't it?
Yeah.
There were people saying they were going to leave CentOS and use Scientific Linux because they wanted a Red Hat RHEL 6 type thing, and then this is good news.
Yes, they had a bit of trouble, you know, sustaining the project, and there was a leadership question and things for a while, wasn't there? But it sounds like they've got past that at least.
And CentOS is the freely compiled version of Red Hat?
Yes.
Basically a straight recompiler with all of the trademark stuff removed.
Right.
Yeah. And it's good.
It is. According to a report... According to a report regularly run by Linux Weekly News writer Jonathan Corbett and reported widely elsewhere, Microsoft has contributed a lot of code to Linux 3.0. He writes... K.Y. Srinivasan topped the list of Chain Tech contributors with a massive set of cleanups to the Microsoft HV driver in the staging tree. It's impressive to see how much cleanup less than 15,000 lines of code can require.
It's quite funny, actually, if you look at the change sets, some of them are like replacements of go to this with return that, you know. And I mean, I don't code, and that looks bad to me. So.
print hello 20 go to 10. Yeah. Well, does this mean we've now got to call it MS/Linux?
No.
Hey, Richard Stallman, hey.
Jeff Markham writes about Mozilla losing customers to Chrome and where they dropped the ball.
Mm. Yeah, this is very interesting because we talked a couple of weeks ago about a thread where people have been talking about deploying Firefox in the enterprise, and now the Firefox has gone for a 6-weekly release cycle. They were like, well, we have a new version to deploy every 6 weeks. We've just convinced our senior management to let us use Firefox as a default browser, and now we're going to have to retest all our apps every 6 weeks or run an old insecure version of Firefox. And lots of people and Firefox were like, well, we don't care about the enterprise.
Well, a specific spokesman for Mozilla said that.
Somebody said that.
Joe seems to be a bit more sane and sensible on this.
Yeah, and he recognises the importance of all of the users. Even if they can't officially support them, they should at least not stick two fingers up at them. Yes. Exactly. The phrase he uses. In its first release for more than 4 years, PuTTY 0.61 is out there. New features include more support for authentication, optimization, and compression.
Do you think it'll ever make it to one?
At this rate, no.
PuTTY is the Windows terminal emulator of choice for a lot of people.
Yeah, I realise this is a Windows app, and you know, normally we talk about Linuxy stuff, but you know, I'm pretty sure most people use PuTTY if they have to use Windows.
Yeah, if they have to look after a Linux server and they have to run a Windows desktop, you're going to use PuTTY at some point, aren't
Absolutely.
You?
It's nice to use.
It's nice to know it's still going.
Yeah.
Changes to how VMware charges for memory usage on its vSphere product have caused much ire in the community and probably increased license costs for many users.
Yes.
This is for vSphere 5.
Which now changed it. A terabyte of RAM in its virtual servers, as long as you're willing to pay about, what was it, something like $20,000 per server.
We reckon it was about three times what it used to be.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry.
We use VMware at work, and not much, because we don't have many Windows servers, thankfully. But they've all been specced with 96 gig of RAM, rather than the next bracket up, because the next one up would cause additional license fees.
Even though
having more RAM in them, you know, would make them performant.
Yeah.
It's based on VMware's licensing model, which is just rubbish.
I'd say you have to buy more physical hardware in order to accommodate them and save money.
Yes, when the whole goal is to virtualize this. Yeah. It's insane.
Good news for the Linux virtualization.
Yay! Yes.
Go for products like Zen or whatever.
Yes, KVM, Zen, hurrah.
IBM is bequeathing.
Yeah, that.
That was the word.
Sorry. Bequeathing its Symfony code to Apache.
Yes. Which is, Symfony is their version of OpenOffice.
Yes, basically.
Well, it's OpenOffice on wrapped. Crack, isn't it?
Yeah, it's OpenOffice wrapped in extra code, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Doesn't it run inside Eclipse or something like that?
something like that. Possibly, which is Eclipse-based in inverted commas. Yes. Yes.
So this could possibly mean that the code which IBM have written is going to get contributed to Apache OpenOffice.
So, yes, because Oracle contributed OpenOffice to Apache about a month ago. So now both codes owned by the same organisation.
Yes. Good.
SUSE and Xamarin have announced a partner agreement to ensure the longevity and support of the Mono project.
Oh, good.
That's good.
To do what?
Well, I think Novell laid off most of the Mono developers, including Miguel de Casa and a whole bunch of others.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Yeah.
And they set up a separate entity providing services and support around Mono, Mono Touch and the other related apps and development platform. And it seems that Novell and SUSE have just kind of handed lock, stock and barrel over to them and said, right, you go for it, support it. You're, you know, legal rights holder over some parts of it as well. So,
cool.
Yeah,
it's good.
It nice. Seemed the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, it's not like they did what Oracle did.
What, give it to someone else and stick two fingers up at them. Ah, you can't have this.
Adobe have released a 64-bit version of Flash for Linux. Well, hang on, sorry, what?
Will they make their minds up, really?
Yes, you can have it, no you can't. Yes, you can have it, no you can't.
There's this a beta of Flash 11.
Yes, there's a how-to for Ubuntu available, so you can. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. You can get a hold of it and try it out. I wonder how long this one will last.
Do you know what? I was surprised. You know, we always complain, or we often complain and hear complaints about how rubbish Flash is on Linux.
Yeah.
I have recently booted into Windows and OS X, and it's just as rubbish on them. Really, just as bad.
You booted into Windows and OS X as if you're never there normally?
Well, you know.
I wanted to
play
CD.
A game, so yes.
What about Prawn? Or
yeah,
Prawn. Or
Prawn, no, that one's under Windows. Linux, that's fine.
Okay, and that's all the news.
And now it's time for some events.
Ooh.
And Ubuntu Community Week is now on, with sessions from Alan Bell, John O'Bacon, Laura CZ.
Tchaikovsky.
Thank you. And some dodgy bloke called Popey.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you talking about on it?
I'm doing a bit about podcasting. And how...
Oh, really?
Yes, I am. I'm going to rip off your talk.
I was going to say, would you like to steal my slides? John O'Bacon's just done it for... stole my article for a Linux Format magazine.
Yes, so I thought I might as well do it for IRC. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember putting a CC license on it, but anyway, carry on. I joke, of course. Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So what other event might we have coming up then, guys?
Like, so soon.
What is it, Mark?
I believe it's the Og Camp.
The Og Camp the is Og nearly Camp. Here. Excellent. So when is that then?
That's on August the 13th and 14th, which is in just under 4 weeks' time.
Yeah.
So one more show and then we're there.
At Farnham Maltings in Farnham in Surrey.
Yep. You can find out more at ogcamp.org. And we want to take a couple of minutes just to run over the schedule for the weekend. We're going to be putting a lot of stuff up on the website at ogcamp.org over the next 4 weeks in the run-up to the event. That started already. There's new content going on there, and there will be new content going on every few days over the next bit. But we thought we'd let you know what's happening. Laura, do you want to tell us about the rundown for the event?
Okay, Friday evening, informal get-together in William Cobbett Pub over the road from the venue.
Yep, so we'll be going along there some point on Friday evening. If you're in Farnham already or nearby and you want to come along for some beers, we'll see you there. You can all buy us one.
Saturday morning, doors open at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Not if you all buy us beer, you know.
Yeah, some of us are going to go there. Geeknik at Saturday lunchtime with drinks sponsored by O'Reilly.
Oh, really?
Yes. They're buying some soft drinks for us to have outside on the grass. There's a nice green area where we can go and sit outside and get away from the indoor stuffiness.
There'll be more information about the Geeknik turning up on the website soon.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Saturday afternoon... Live joint UUPC and LO recording.
That would be the Linux Outlaws guys.
Yes. Yep. And us.
Well, yes, we're the UUPC bit.
Oh, yes, so we are.
I'm hoping people know who we are.
And then there'll be a couple of hours breather, or possibly only 1 hour, depending on who does the calculations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of hours, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So Saturday evening from 7 p.m. in the cellar bar at the venue for drinks and entertainment, sponsored by Bitfolk.
Yes.
Does this mean that Andy Smith from Bitfolk is going to turn up and do his spoons act or something?
And I believe there's an amount of free beer which may be making an appearance.
Them will not. Might be.
Yeah,
might
be. Maybe free beer. Yes. Turn up and find out.
Yeah, turn up early. Book early to avoid disappointment.
And then Sunday morning, doors open optimistically at 10:30.
Yep.
And yeah, that's it. And I think we finished, was it mid-afternoon on Sunday?
Finishing about 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah, like usual.
And you'll remind, if you are coming on the Sunday, £3.50 to park for the whole day on the Saturday, sorry.
Yeah, parking on the Saturday, not on the Sunday. Sunday's free parking.
Right, so, yeah. £3.50 for the whole day on the Saturday.
And it's a big car park, isn't it?
Yeah,
plenty of space.
Should be all right. And then after all that's finished, and when we're all knackered and we've all packed away, we'll be having informal drinks at the Premier Inn Aldershot,
which is the recommended hotel if you're looking for somewhere to stay.
Yes, yep. It's not too expensive, not too far away, about 3 miles, or you can get the train from Farnham to Aldershot and have a little stroll through Aldershot town centre with your bulletproof vest on.
A brief jog.
Yes, to the police station.
Dan will like that. It'll like being in Liverpool again, won't it?
I liked Liverpool.
Okay, so Mark, yes. Tell us about a new speaker we've got.
Wayne Myers, who is going to be talking about recording professional audio on Linux, because he's a musician and he uses Linux to record his stuff.
Cool. Okay.
And he's also going to be providing the entertainment on the Saturday night, which should be great.
Some of the entertainment, I believe, but there may well be a few guest appearances as well.
There may well be, but that's to be confirmed.
Really,
okay, so obviously we've got a scheduled track this year, but alongside that we've got our two bar camp tracks, which are going to work just like before, where you come up with an idea and bring it along and say you want to do the talk, and then people vote on the talks, and the ones which most people want to see will get seen by the most people, and so on.
Slickly done.
Clear as crystal.
Yes. We're going to be using a system which has been written by friend of the show, John the Nice Guy Spriggs.
Yay.
Such a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. It's called Campfire Manager. So we're going to have it running on some screens around the venue, and you can send texts to it to say, I want to do this talk, and it'll put it up on the system. We're going to have some instructions about how it will work on the website, just so that you're not too confused when we get there, but there'll be signs up, and there'll also hopefully be a web interface if you find the texting too hard to work out. But it's pretty straightforward, so we're just trying to make sure that you all know as much about it as you can do beforehand.
Sounds good. We're also looking for more crew. If you're interested in helping out, coming along to the event, maybe you haven't got anybody to come along with and you think, well, I'll just end up sitting on my own all day. Come along, volunteer for the crew. It's a great way to get involved. It's a great way to meet people, if you see what I mean, and to be part of the event. You can email ogcamp@ubuntu-uk.org to volunteer for the crew.
And we're having some issues with Wi-Fi. So we're hoping to have connectivity for speakers to use during their talks. So that should be fine. But if, as an attendee, could you be prepared not to have any free Wi-Fi and bring 3G dongles?
Yeah, bring a dongle or use your phone or whatever. But don't expect vast bandwidth and free Wi-Fi, because it may not happen.
Yeah. We're working on it.
Yeah, we're looking into it, but
if you happen to work for a company that, you know, gives people wireless free networking 3G equipment.
Yeah, bring along 100 dongles. That would be great.
Get in touch, please.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're interested in helping out, seriously, if you're interested in helping out, you've got a bit of network expertise, again, drop us an email, ogcamp@ubuntu-uk.org. And finally, we need to thank our sponsors very quickly.
We've got Bitemark, who are our amazing sponsor helping pay for the venue.
Yeah, thank you.
We have Google, who are giving us some money as well.
They are indeed. Thank you, Google.
And
Chris Proctor, from on behalf of lug.org.uk. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Nice. Very nice man. And Bitfolk, we already talked about, sponsoring the party.
And Linux Format are our media partners, as ever.
Yes.
That's it. Well, Mark, you look like you had something to say.
I was just going to say that they just published a very lovely advert for us in the issue, which came out today for subscribers.
Indeed. Mm. So look out for that in the shops.
And in fact, there are discounts on subscriptions that we will put up on the website.
Okay, cool. Ooh, so excellent. If you want to subscribe, you can get a few quid off, maybe. Okay, so we'll have a bit more information in the next episode, so tune in then. But for now, that's all the OddCamp information.
Right, now on the last live show, because the last show we released was pre-recorded, we set a competition to win a free audiobook from Textbook Stuff.
Yes, we interviewed Barnaby, didn't we?
That was it.
Yes.
I was away that week.
He's a lovely man.
He's a very lovely man.
And so we've got to announce the winner. Who? Can somebody remind me what the question was? Because I wasn't here when we said it.
Yeah. Don't look at me. You set the question.
Barnaby set the question. And it was, what was the name of the unfinished work Dickens was working on when he died?
And the correct answer was...
The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Okay. And we can announce the winner. We had 20 correct entries, didn't we?
Yep.
And the winner was Ben Stevens.
Well done, Ben.
Congratulations to Ben.
So we will email him.
Yes. He wins a free copy of The Signalman and Other Ghostly Tales, which is also by Charles Dickens, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yes.
It's a sort of ghost story audio book.
Excellent.
We're getting all highbrow.
I'm sure we can fix that.
And we've got a new competition, is that right?
We do have a new competition. We were talking last week about the HP ProLiant microserver. And we've got one to give away.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Now, these are the sort of little miniature sort of sexy server things, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes. Like, it's got 4-disc slots and, it's a nice little server.
Yes.
Yes.
It's the spec of it. I think it's got a gig of RAM by default. Yeah. And it's got 160 gig SATA drive. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. It's brand new, in a box, never been opened, and ready to go out to one of our listeners.
Go and listen to the last episode if you need a full review of what's actually inside the thing.
Yeah.
We've got a question?
Yes. if you've listened to the last show, you'll know that we were a bit confused about exactly what processor was in the microserver. So the question is, what is the exact make and model number of the CPU in the HP ProLiant microserver?
Okay.
And we'll ship it to... this is tricky because we're in the UK and we need to be reasonably careful about where we ship it to because of how much it's going to cost us to send it.
Yeah.
So ideally, if you're in Europe, well, ideally, if you live in my road.
Yes.
Then, if possible.
And you
win it. Of course, that won't obviously biasly.
Yes. But if you happen to win it and you're in Europe and America, then it should be fairly easy. If it's somewhere a bit more weird, then it might be a bit more tricky for us to ship it to you. So
yes.
EU is good.
Yeah, we might have to limit this to EU and
North America.
And North America, unless you want to pay for us to ship it to you if you're in somewhere weird.
There is actually a genuine experience behind that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's not, yes, that took a long time to get that server sent. So where can people send their entries?
To podcast at
to competition
at ubuntu-uk.org.
And the question reminder, what is the exact make and model of the CPU in the microserver?
And how long is it going to be open for, this competition?
Usual 2 weeks.
2 weeks till the next episode?
Sunday before the next episode.
Just 2 weeks? Yeah.
Okay, cool. That means it's over and done with before our camp, I suppose.
Exactly.
So there we go. Good thinking, Alan. So I see what
everybody
you did
email your answers and the winner will be drawn from DevRandom on my microserver.
So it's selecting its own friend.
Yes.
Okay, well, good luck with that. And Laura, are you going to go and make some tea now?
I am. I'll be back later.
Right, we're going to go and interview George while you make the tea.
So we've got George Castro on the line, who is the external developer relations person for Canonical. And we spoke to George last year at UDS in Brussels, and we've now got him on the line from somewhere in the US. Hey, George, how are you doing?
Hi, how's it going?
Not bad at all. Not bad. Is that right, external developer relations? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's external developer relations liaison.
Okay.
It's a funny question. What that means? Basically, I'm usually the guy who handles communications between people and the project and people outside the project. So traditionally, that's been upstreams, Debian. It was kind of a catch-all situations, but lately it's been a lot more advocacy of getting people started contributing to Ubuntu itself. So I'm kind of the opposite of Daniel Holbach, who kind of figures out what workflows that are already in the project need to be fixed. So he kind of makes sure that once someone gets involved in Ubuntu that, you know, we make that as smooth and as fun as it can be.
And what is
my job is to kind of be the on-ramp to that.
So where's the biggest recruitment drive you've got at the moment? In the past, it was always packaging and, you know, getting people to package stuff, and then there was bug triages. And where is your focus at the moment of getting people involved?
My focus last two cycles has been Unity, because it's like a newer project. And one of the nice things about having like a project from scratch is you can kind of set it up properly, you know, instead of getting it going and then like trying to fix everything later. So I made it a real effort to try to make the submission process and like the mentorship process and all that stuff as smooth as possible right from the get-go, so that we could take care of those problems early. And since it was two releases before an LTS, it was kind of those, well, you know, we really need to get these processes in place so that by the time the LTS is out, people who want to contribute have, you know, gone through the process and we've gone back and fixed a few things and, you know, that sort of thing.
So do you see, I realize Unity was born from Canonical, and it's, as far as I'm aware, only really used on Ubuntu at the moment, certainly as a default desktop. Do you still see it as an upstream project?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, it's strange because there's external upstream projects that are not Canonical, and then internal upstream projects where the person might work for Canonical, but, you know, when the Unity guys, you know, they're working on their project, we have some of the same challenges that we do with an external upstream, like, hey, when are you going to roll the tarballs? A packager got the tarball and it doesn't compile. You know, and then he has to go find that person and say, hey, can you fix your tarball? I mean, it's a lot of the same issues that you would have with an external upstream as well. Theoretically, it would be awesome to say, well, we all work for the same company and the same project, so theoretically all the processes should be a lot more efficient and smooth. But the way software kind of works is sometimes it's we can take the things we've learned from working with an external contributor like GNOME and try to make that easier for us internally. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And what kind of contributions have you had? Obviously, there's the usual kind of bug fixes and triaging and that kind of stuff. Have you had any significant new contributions from outside Canonical and maybe even outside the Ubuntu project?
So far the first person that I can remember who actually did a feature contribution was Andrea Azzarone, who made the launcher resizable. And just last week he landed the ability for you to like drag the mounted USB icon like into the trash can, and I guess that ejects it or unmounts it or whatever it's called. Initially when we first started, because Unity was kind of a rewrite, right? It was based on Mutter, and then we decided to make it a Compass plugin. So at first, we started off with contributors. We were saying, hey, this is kind of like a complicated piece of software. So we started the bite-sized bugs, which are like really kind of easy, you know, ways to learn the code and stuff and not something totally complicated that was architecture and all that stuff. So at first, they were really mostly like small bug fixes. And since Andrea and Marco Trevisan and a few other people attended UDS, and we're able to spend some time talking to the Unity developers, I think now they're getting to the point where they can start developing like real features.
And is that, is that stuff
that's just, hey, I fixed a small little bug?
Is that stuff that's been spec'd out for, you know, the roadmap for Unity, or is it just stuff like the usual developer itch? They found something that they would like and they contribute it, or do you see what I mean? Is it part of the plan, or is this just stuff they come up with?
Yeah, so it depends. We have this list of what we call backlog bugs that are stuff that was in the plan but didn't make 11.04. And a lot of those backlog bugs are filed by John Lee that came directly from user testing. So usually it's some of that, but, you know, the guys kind of like scratch their own itches as well. And now the non-canonical contributors are actually reviewing code in Launchpad, and which is how the project works, right? Like someone proposes a branch and then it needs review from the peers to be accepted. Before, only canonical employees are doing that. And just in the last few weeks, you know, Andrea and Mark have grown comfortable enough with like the architecture that they've started reviewing code as well. So I'm really excited about that.
So how are things looking with Unity going for 11.10? Are we going to see the 2D version finished? Are we going to see there's been a lot of concern about accessibility in particular, which we've heard a lot about in a few of the shows we've had recently. So are those sort of things looking like they're going to be sorted?
Yeah, so as far as in Anaric right now, 2D is in the seed and the classic desktop is not. So, and the desktop team was able to get Qt on the CD relatively early. And then we're still having disk space problems, but that seems mostly sorted by now. As far as accessibility, unfortunately, right now, off the top of my head, I don't have a status. I do know that there's three or four people working on it.
Cool.
So I'm going to have to get back to you on that. But I do know that it's a priority for Luke Yelovich, and I believe there's a person from Agalia, I believe, that's working on accessibility. I just saw him land some stuff today. So, and the last final bit is Jason Smith landed a new alt-tab behavior today, which kind of caught me off guard. But it looks really nice. Instead of the traditional alt-tab, we now show you your icons in a much bigger space, and then we display the emblems and the download progress in the alt-tab. So that's looking pretty nice.
Cool. With the release that we had, 11.04, the first Compiz-based Unity, you mentioned that there was some stuff that's been pushed back that didn't make the release, and almost certainly there will be stuff that won't be finished for 11.10, such as the way of things. The project seems to get quite a lot of criticism, not because of Unity, but it got a lot of criticism for Unity, but it also got a lot of criticism for it being unfinished and there being big gaps in the functionality. Do you think we can, get back any of those people who've left the project or that have, dismissed Unity out of hand as a result of it being flawed, maybe?
Yeah. It's one of those things where luckily the Firefox guys have changed their release process. It makes it easy to do an analogy where I think we're getting to the point where software projects have to iterate quickly, right? Like now if you read about a great new feature in Firefox, in the past you would have to wait a year, right, for it to finally land. And then they, thanks to the influence from, Google Chrome, software projects are starting to realize that getting those enhancements and fixes out to users as fast as possible is a good idea. So I think that we're revving, Ubuntu in the 6-month cycle at as fast as you can go, because it's like an operating system. If it was too short, it would be crazy. If it was too long, then you would never get, the features you want. So usually sometimes people say, hey, Unity's kind of unfinished. And it was well, if we would have waited a year, then you probably would have said it's unfinished, but the pile of bugs and stuff that we would have had to fix would also be proportionally bigger to the amount of time that you haven't released.
Yeah.
So there's certainly areas where I think Unity lacks some stuff. But, first of all, it's kind of hard to follow up GNOME 2 because we've been shipping that since, 7 years now or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Ubuntu never had to go through a major transition, right? We kind of already ship with a 2.6 kernel, so we never had to go through that. We never had to go through the GTK1 to GTK2 transition. So we've got the move to a new desktop, and we've got the move from GTK2 to GTK3. So there was definitely a lot of churn, right? And, we were switching Firefox to the new release model where we're trying to ship the fastest, newest version, regardless of what Ubuntu version you're having. So, even without the desktop, there was certainly a lot of churn already happening in Ubuntu. And there's just some releases sometimes where, the amount of change is a lot. And then you say, well, how do you mitigate that? Do we do it now? Keeping in mind that in 2 releases we have an LTS. Or do you kind of bite the bullet and say, for 90% of users, Unity is, basically good to go. Unfortunately, sometimes people get kind of, can I say screwed? But, if you Focus Follows Mouse, Unity totally, doesn't work for you. If you have, even though I feel, because, I measured it, the multi-monitor support in Unity is a little bit better than it was in GNOME 2, except for the one critical bug where if your monitor is left of instead of right of, we draw the launcher in the wrong spot. So you would think, oh, man, Unity's multi-monitor support really sucks because you're affected by that one bug, you know? And I happen to have my monitor on the right of, so I never noticed it until someone followed the bug. So, I mean, you know, keep in mind that software's never finished. I think, you know, for most use cases, Unity was ready. And for the ones that are not, I think we've done a decent job about getting people on board if they do want to fix, you know, whatever issues are missing.
We had a we had a tweet from Mike Basinger, who you know, I'm sure. We asked on Twitter Identica saying that we were going to interview you, and one of the questions he asked was, what you think is the one killer app or function in Ubuntu that people don't use?
Hmm. Man, there's so many good ones, I don't know.
Do you know, I know one that George has done a screencast on that when I saw it, I thought...
Oh, which one?
The one about the dynamic playlist thing in Banshee.
So
where you have like different music playing at different times of the day, and that I was just amazed by.
Oh, right, okay. So it knows when it's lunchtime and plays
I don't know. You tell me, George. I watched it and was kind of like, oh,
yeah, like I would create smart playlists based on certain things. So, like, for example, I create a smart playlist on songs I've purchased. I would search, you know, because then I would know that those are songs that, like, I bought. So I would want to, like, religiously back those up more than I would the other one. But there's this awesome site. I think it's called smartplaylist.com. They have a whole bunch of really clever ways to create dynamic smart playlists. So you would say, search for love in the title and then call it, like, love songs. Yeah. Or,
that
yeah, one thing
work.
I like to do is...
Yeah, sophisticated.
Yeah, I like to do songs that have over 80% rating, but I haven't listened to in, you know, a month, and I call that forgotten favorites. So usually when I was like, oh, I really love that song, I haven't listened to that song in a while. So one of the things I'd love to do, but I'm always out of time, is just go through all those really, really smart, awesome playlists, and then... talk to someone on the desktop team about shipping the real cool ones by default, but I haven't had time to do that. But if someone wants to help me with that, I'd really love it.
Something, speaking of videos you've done, I recently saw a talk you gave at the last Ubuntu Developer Summit about deleting stuff. You're quite passionate about deleting stuff. What is this all about?
I am. Well, what happened that is I went to a local team meeting here in Michigan, and this one guy came up to me. He's like, oh, you guys keep breaking wireless. And I'm like, ugh, not this again. and then, you know, so immediately I thought, you know, it's always like, oh, you know, we really need to work on quality better and stuff. And then I was like, hey, you know, how'd you end up in this situation? And he was like, well, I searched for whatever his wireless card was, and he had this, like, old, really, really old, out-of-date forum thread or something on the wiki. I don't remember what it actually was. But it was just something that was really, really horrible. And turns out, if he would have just plugged in his Ethernet card or his Ethernet cable, Ubuntu would have automatically said, hey, I need this driver for this Broadcom card, and then snagged it for him because he brought his friend with him who had the exact same netbook. But by then, the guy had, like, built his own kernel, and he was copying, like, firmware from another release and whatever bad things you could possibly imagine. And then and there, I was like, you know what? The guy kind of... You know, it's not his fault, you know, that he searched for Google and then there's, like, a whole bunch of, like, old stuff. So I said, you know what, it's pretty horrible that we don't do a better job. As a project as a whole, you know, I'm not blaming the forums or the wiki people or doc people, because we do this too, right? I have blog posts where I recommend some stuff for people to do, and a year later it's out of date, but then I leave it on the internet, and then I forget that someday someone's going to run that. So what I've been doing is... internally, with the desktop team, I said, you know what, next time, you know, look at your namespace, and if you have something that's bad, just remove it. I forget his name, documentation guy, Phil Bull, posted on the doc list that he's going to go start going through the wiki pages that have been marked to delete and go through them. And then the Ubuntu Forums Council has decided that they're going to index, they're going to stop Google from indexing archive content from, I think, any release older than whatever the supported release.
So basically, people won't turn up on these sites or our sites,
right,
searching for stuff, right, that's current and find old rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah. So right now, if you search for Ubuntu Broadcom Wireless, the first thread's from the forums from 2005, updated in 2006.
Wow.
You're like, yay.
Nice.
Yeah. So the idea would be, maybe the person doesn't find that, and either someone will ask, you know, and then get the more modern answer, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know. And then a lot of people worry that, hey, you know, this is our knowledge, and, you know, are we throwing that away? I'm not advocating removing, you know, all the old content, because, you know, it's certainly nice to see when people are arguing about what the next, you know, animal name is, and all the kind of social things I think are fine.
Yeah.
But as far as old technical documentation, as far as I'm concerned, it's all, you know, it all moves very quickly, and it's all up for being destroyed.
And how would you recommend, how would you advocate people go about doing that? Would you just go and find a page on the wiki and delete it, or delete your own blog,
no.
or what?
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, like, usually what I tell people is kind of take stewardship of the hardware you have. So I have a ThinkPad X220, right? So I would Google that ThinkPad or whatever and look at the resources that are available and then apply that to what your Ubuntu experience was. So maybe you had to, like, for example, on mine, I had to do one little thing to get the touchpad to do two-finger scrolling, right? And then I would just go, you know, I would do a search, ThinkPad X220 Ubuntu or something, and then see what comes up, see what official docs come up, see what threads in the forums come up, and then just basically give it a once-over. If it returns something from 2005 or something, then, you know, at the minimum, you could create, I've done this in the past where I've created a page for a certain laptop, and then basically I just wrote everything works perfectly, you know, in the little template. And you know what? That might help someone, but, you know, if, you know how laptops are, sometimes you buy them and they say they're a certain model number, or the wireless card says it's a certain model number, but they're totally different manufacturers of the wireless card.
Yeah.
So, you know, if my ThinkPad page says, you know, hey, this worked perfectly, someone could just add at the bottom, I have this variation that has this card, and I'm having this problem, you know, link to a bug report. And then, who knows, maybe in 6 months that bug gets fixed. Do we still need to have, you know, the reference to the bug report there on the page? So, I don't know, I'm kind of getting to the, have hardware, especially hardware information, just be up to date with whatever the current state of the art is. Because sometimes I run into a hardware page and it says, oh, the following hardware has all these problems and it's bugs from like three releases ago that don't affect it anymore. So do we need to keep them around? I say just get rid of it and then try it on a new release and then see what works.
Cool. A very good note. We need to wrap it up there, I'm afraid, George. We've chatted for plenty of time, a little bit longer than we had planned. But thank you very much indeed for talking.
I'm kind of chatting. I get that from Alan.
Yeah, it's not a problem at all, but it's very nice to speak to you. And thank you for coming on the show.
Cheers, George.
Cheers.
Awesome. Thanks. Anytime.
And now it's time for your feedback.
Thanks for the tea, Laura.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. So Brian Vandenbronk, Vanden on Identica, mentioned us last week saying,
who are these people who both, one, find Synaptic confusing, and two, have the wherewithal to put together a very entertaining podcast?
Is that a compliment or
not? I'm not quite sure.
What was that in reference to?
I think it's aimed at me, because we were talking about the fact that Synaptic had been removed from the default install of Ubuntu 11.10.
Ah.
And I think I mentioned how I found it very confusing to use.
Yeah, I think I said something similar too.
Mm, yes. Good.
But as ever, if there's a negative comment made, it's by Alan.
Yes. Of course it was. Of course it was.
But yes, thanks for the nice comment anyway.
Yes, thank
about
you.
About the entertaining bit.
And the Wing Commander seems to be missing in action, or at least on holiday, so nothing from him this week. We have, however, had this voicemail from Professor Erwin Stanley.
Greetly, and many contrafibulations on your superbly podcrasty. As Professor, I has always taken keenly most interest in scientific and questifold for erudile wisdy. So my questy to you, loco crowdy, is this. As long-time user of the computer bowl with the clickety-typey-clapper and the pointy-mousy, most squeakiful, I was Wonderload. What do you think is the best Lingy Speaky Chat for the Rumatio of the Computer Bowl Programmaticus? Fruity Pascal, C Pasty Pasty, or Java Java Frappuccino Scripty? I would most cheesily like to start a whimsical most accessibilitatty for the comprehensile of the masses on the interwobble. Oh yes, goodly by load, and much deep joy to all your far flummers transmitty philolopers. Yours, Erwin Stanley.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but come back the Wing Commander.
But thank you, Professor.
I tell you what, it was jolly convenient that on the week that the Wing Commander was not available, that Professor Erwin Stanley should send us some voicemail.
Yeah, what a happy coincidence. Yeah. And if you have any idea whatsoever what he was talking about.
I think he might have been asking about web development.
Okay.
Blimey. You understand gibberish as well, do you?
In which case, a web developer.
You should use PHP.
PHP.
PHP. Okay, well, yeah, that was very bizarre. I think we need to finish now. And that is all for this episode, so thank you very much for listening. For those of you who are listening live, thank you for tuning in a day earlier than normal. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, which has got voicemail numbers, and it's got our Twitter feed and our Facebook group, which has seen quite a bit of action in the last few weeks, actually, and our IRC channel. Let us know what you think of the show, or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. And you can join us on Tuesday, the 2nd of August, for our next live episode.
Back to Tuesday.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, back to the normal day.
Last one before Odd Camp.
Indeed.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. I suppose we better kind of prepare something for that. I don't know.
What, for Odd Camp or the one before Odd Camp?
No, for Odd Camp.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, because we've got a live show to get
through. Yeah, why don't you do that?
Yeah, in my spare time.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, enjoy the show today. Join us in a couple of weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.